This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio. The midterm elections are now less than 2 weeks away, and education has quickly become a central focus in North Carolina's key races. Incumbent Senator Kay Hagan and challenger Tom Tillis exchange jabs and debates and attack ads about the issues of teacher pay, the education budget, and a similar set of conversations is playing out in legislative races throughout the state. Today is another in our series of State of Things issues tables, and we'd love to hear from you. You can use hashtag SOT issues on Twitter, or you can email us at sot@wnc.org. Joining us now to talk about the role of education in the midterms is WNC education reporter Rima Crace. Hello, Rima.
Hi.
So let's talk about the Senate race first. Kay Hagan and Tom Tillis. Education is playing a big role in that race. Tell us how.
Yeah, it is. It's playing a huge role. And in some ways, it's kind of an unusual topic to headline a U.S. Senate race because it's typically seen as a local and state issue. But it's also not incredibly surprising. We've seen education come up as a huge issue in North Carolina in the past couple of years. And frankly, a lot of teachers, a lot of their supporters haven't really haven't been a fan of how education has fared under the Republican legislature. So it's not surprising for Hagan to point at Tillis and make him the face of that Republican legislature. So for that reason, it's not surprising. But also, Tillis thinks he says he's done good for teachers and for education. You know, education spending has gone up under him. He gave teachers one of the bigger pay raises, or he helped give teachers one of the bigger pay raises. So he's taking an opportunity to boast that.
Well, let's see how it's playing out. We'll talk about Kay Hagan, who spent a lot of time talking about Tom Tillis. As you say, I mean, he was the Speaker of the House in the legislature when those budgets were created and when those tax cuts were being proposed, as well as teacher raises. So let's see how Kay Hagan tries to frame Tom Tillis's career.
He's done tax cuts for the wealthy, and he has gutted our education system. He has cut $500 million from public education. And you know what that means, folks? That means fewer teachers in the classroom. That means larger classroom sizes. And that means outdated textbooks.
All right. $500 million. That's a big number.
$500 million. She has been saying that over and over and over and over again. Lots of Democrats have been using that figure. And it's not accurate. It's misleading. So she's saying that Tillis and others have cut $500 million out of education funding. And what she's referring to give you some context, is that, every couple of years, the state comes up with a projection. It's called a continuation budget. And they say, this is how much money we need to keep the public schools as they are, to maintain the status quo, to keep them running. And so what she's referring to is the fact that this most recent budget is about $500 million less than what was hoped or anticipated. But that $500 million also takes into account community colleges and universities. So it's a little bit of a creative accounting. They did some creative accounting to come up with that
though,
number.
If you come up with a more accurate number, it's around $365 million that's been cut. That's still a pretty big number.
It's a big number. It is. But also, Tillis is quick to deflect that and to try to tie Hagan to some of the failed education to some of the failed policies that Obama represents. But also, he is quick to say that, actually, education spending has gone up under my tenure.
Spending has gone up, $365 million cut. That has translated into larger class sizes, fewer teachers, and again, this question of outdated textbooks. So part of what she said is inaccurate. Some of it, though, the final result of what the actual cuts is sort of accurate. And then Tillis will come back and say, look, the fact is we've done well by teachers. So let's listen.
Since 2011, we're spending $1 billion more a year in education. This year, we provided an average 7% pay increase for teachers. We had to catch up the newer teachers because they were getting behind and we weren't competitive with our neighboring states. Next year, we're going to give them another 7% raise.
All right. Pay raises for teachers. Again, little fact checking on that.
I would love to talk about that. But also just quickly back onto your point about how education spending has gone up under his tenure. As you said, if you actually back out some of the salary adjustments that were put into the budgets and money for retirement and benefits for teachers, like you said, we've seen that class spending for classroom activities has actually gone down in the last 4 years. So everything from textbooks and teacher assistants and literary coaches. But also, there's a case to be made that the state funding just hasn't been keeping up with the student enrollment. I mean, student enrollment has grown significantly in the last few years. But so, yeah, he's countering those attacks by saying, of course, that spending has gone up under his tenure, even though there's some caveats. But also, yeah, he's saying that he helped give teachers a significant pay raise, about an average of 7%, which is true. But of course, some folks are quick to say, well, technically, if you look at it, teachers earlier in their careers were getting some of the bigger pay bumps, in some cases up to 18%, while some of the veteran or more experienced teachers were seeing less than maybe 2%. But again, his whole thing is that he thinks that by giving pay raises to the teachers early in their careers, that he's helping to recruit and retain the teachers and really incentivize them. And well, this is just one step.
And that has been a source of controversy, whether or not the money belongs sort of at the earlier end of the career span. And we'll talk more about that in detail as our conversation continues. I want to get to some of the other races, though, because it's not just playing out in the Senate races. As you suggest, this has always been a kind of a statewide issue, and it is playing out in the legislative races around the system. There was a couple of radio debates in Western North Carolina. Tim Moffitt is running against Brian Turner. Tim Moffitt, the incumbent, in a hotly contested seat for House District 116. So here's Democratic challenger Brian Turner.
You know, when we have teachers who are leaving to go work in other states because they can make more money and because they can be better supported in the classroom, we're obviously doing something wrong.
All right. So there we hear it again.
Right. Yeah. And he's referring to this this fact that many teachers have been leaving. You know, in Wake County, there were some reports last year that about more than 600 teachers had left in the middle of the year. And also there have been some other states, Texas in particular, that have come in and tried to recruit teachers because they recognize sort of the state of teachers and education in North Carolina and are trying to take advantage of that. But yeah, similar dynamics playing out between the opponents. You know, even Democrats like Turner on the local level are pointing to the $500 million cut fact and saying, well, you know, look, you are hurting our public schools, and Republicans are coming back and saying that's not true. We know education spending has gone up. We've helped give pay raises. So, yeah, similar dynamic.
Tim Moffitt, on the other hand, has countered that and said that essentially challenged Brian Turner's right to even challenge him on education.
I also find it interesting that you like to attack me on public education issues when you have no relevant experience with public education. I think that those attacks are hollow for the most part.
And the fact is that education, whether we're experienced in it or not personally, has become top of the agenda for voters in the state. What are some of the other issues, some of the broader issues that are playing into this concentration and attention to education across the state?
Well, it's you know, like I said, it's kind of unusual for it to be such a prominent issue in the Senate race, but it's very common for it to come up as the number one issue, if not among the top issues in local races and statewide races. Partly because, you know, in lots of these districts, especially in rural districts, public schools are among the largest employers, if not the largest employers. So if you're treating your public schools well, the economy is thriving, and also that means teachers and their supporters play a big role.
So when you lay off teachers and teacher assistants, those are important parts of your economy locally, and particularly, as you say, in these rural areas, that's some spending that actually goes away. We will keep tabs on it. Thank you so much, Rima Crace, WNC Education Reporter.
Thank you.
Well, we're going to continue this conversation about education and take a step back, really, and look at the state's public education system at large. North Carolina has long been considered a national leader in education. Historically, the state has put a strong emphasis on supporting teachers, public schools, and a high-caliber higher education system. Since the recession, though, many have been concerned about the state of education in North Carolina. We're joined by an expert panel to talk about how education works in North Carolina, how it has changed, and how we can move forward. James E. Ford is a world history teacher at Geringer High School in Charlotte and this year's North Carolina Teacher of the Year. Welcome, James.
Glad to be here. Thanks.
Good to have you. Eric Gukan is Senior Education Advisor to Governor McCrory. Welcome back, Eric.
Good to be with you.
And Jane Fleener is the Dean of the College of Education at North Carolina State University. Welcome, Jane.
Thank you so much.
And James E. Ford, we're very happy to have you here as Teacher of the Year, and we're going to take you off the spot. You do not represent every teacher in the state of North Carolina, so you may speak for yourself. I just wanted to say that right off the bat. Jane, we just talked about the role of education and the fact that it's playing such an important part in this upcoming election. Education has not always been such a partisan issue in this state. You've been around in this state for long enough to know about that. Tell us how you think it became such a partisan debate.
I think the did you ask for James or Jane?
Jane, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think the national conversations have changed quite a bit over the last 35 years since I've been in education. I would say when I started in education here, the focus was very much on making this state and focusing on this state's agenda. In the most recent past, I think we have a national agenda, both coming from the micromanaging of the federal government, as well as some of the issues associated with the ALEC agenda and associated also just with our political climate, which has become much more divisive.
So those are some of the ways in which, I mean, and for a long time, it was a bipartisan issue. I mean, if you go back to Jim Hunt and even before, it was not hard to put together a bipartisan coalition to move education forward in this state.
Absolutely. Yeah. During the 80s, there was a sense that we could change the state and make the state the best state in the South, if not in the country. I was actually recruited into teaching in sort of a pre-teaching fellows type program. The teaching fellows grew out of the 80s, along with National Board Certification, which provided a career status pathway for teachers. The curriculum changes with a focus on the AP curriculum really changed sort of the status of education in the state. When I left the state to teach somewhere else at the end of the 80s, I would say the state I went to was at least 10 years behind North Carolina.
Why not name the state?
Do what? Why not name the state?
Yeah. Where do you go?
That happened to be Oklahoma.
I mean, I will say that because you went to two states where, you know, where the turnout to be at the bottom of a lot of the polls on education quality. And I mean, that just is where they are.
Right. Right.
And you went to those states.
And the climate there at the time was also becoming very confrontational with respect to teaching, teacher preparation. And I think the biggest change I see, and this is sort of through the lens of being a teacher educator, is that rather than teaching and teachers becoming a solution, they're becoming the blame. And if it's not the teachers, it's the teacher education. And that's really problematic in this state as a growing state because we already don't produce enough teachers. The UNC system schools only prepare about a third of the teachers needed every year as in new teaching positions. And when you don't produce enough teachers and you're, you know, importing teachers, you're also disrupting the career commitment oftentimes.
Well, and if you're going to import teachers, you have to be competitive. And so let's get to the issues now, because one of the primary issues in this election is past legislative sessions has been teacher pay. We've heard concerns that the new teacher pay model that's focusing its raises on newer teachers often left veteran teachers behind. So, Eric Gukan, you are the senior education advisor to Governor McCrory. Talk about this new model, this new system of pay, and the rationale behind focusing the pay on some of the younger teachers.
Sure. Well, let me just start off by saying it's such an honor to be with James and with Jane, two really esteemed educators in our state, and I want to thank you for your service. You know, in regards to the teacher raise, so the last time I was on the show, we ended the conversation by you asking me, is Governor McCrory committed to teacher pay and increasing teacher pay in our state? And I think we've delivered on that promise. Speaker Tillis mentioned, average 7% raise, and that's been the soundbite. But I think the reasoning behind why we did what we did, first of all, the raises, and Rima, you mentioned this, the raises are focused across the board, but they are focused in the first 12 years of the profession, where all the data tells us is where the highest turnover is. So these 7 to 18% raises, that's where the salary was critically low. And it was, you know, that was where the house was on fire. And I think that was why we focused in this first step of the raise. It's a $287 million investment in our teachers in a short session. Pretty historic stuff when you think about where we were. And we didn't get into this mess with teacher raises overnight. I mean, this is something that has been happening over the last decade in terms of us really not focusing on that. So I think it's a bipartisan issue. It needs to be a bipartisan issue, and we need to get past these political sound bites and do what's right for our kids.
Well, James E. Ford, as a teacher, how do you feel about the idea that most of the raises were focused on teachers in that first 12 years?
I think that the calculus behind it is relevant. I mean, when you look at the earliest years of teaching, that tends to be where the most of the turnover is. And I think one thing that has to be acknowledged is that it is an accomplishment. I think teachers deserve a lot of credit for raising the issues and changing the tenor of the conversation, making education the dominant part of the last session and of not just this election, but a national debate as well. I think one thing that we have to consider is that this is a positive first step or a down payment, if you would like. But we have to draft a long term comprehensive plan for how we're going to continue to finance bringing up average teacher pay to the national average, at least, or making it competitive, not just regionally, but nationally. I think we all agree that the 47 number that was lingering prior to was an embarrassment from everybody's perspective. Nobody wanted to be listed as 47th in teacher pay. I think now we're somewhere in the high 30s. So that is an improvement. We went from failure to still below average. But I think that even in the classroom, a D is not good enough. We need to continue to draft a plan for how we can bring everybody up to above average, because we want North Carolina to be the best.
We are talking about the politics of education today on The State of Things. Jane Fleener, what about that? I mean, Eric talks about this being a kind of long-term problem. It really goes back. Certainly the Great Recession caused a lot of this, a big bump. A lot of every state had to make reductions across the board. But significantly, North Carolina has not restored spending to its pre-2008 levels, and significantly offered a tax cut for corporations at the higher tax brackets. So there was money available taken off the table. That becomes part of the politics of this. But how does it play out in the classroom?
Well, these cuts significantly challenge our teachers to be creative in how they fund their classes and how they fund their activities. A lot of the money that's going to public education is not filtering down into the classroom. So that's a real challenge for teachers. I also think that it becomes a function of pre-service teachers when they start to think about, you know, how can they support their own career and their own families and go into teaching when they don't even have textbooks.
What about the impact of, you know, you heard the calculus, you've got a teacher, we told James he does not represent all teachers, James E. Ford, and then Eric Gukan talking about needing to focus that raise on the place where we see the greatest turnover. But what impact does that have on senior teachers because you've now made this distinction?
I think the senior teachers feel really demoralized, and some of that is the subcontext of having felt over the last several years of being blamed for the state of education. And of course, education is a larger issue than any one constituency impacting. And so the senior teachers, when you look at the Wake County teachers that were leaving, many of them were career educators who just felt like they'd had enough. And they left the classrooms with great regrets. They cared deeply about their students, but they just felt like they'd had enough. And I think as the child of career educators, and I know how important education has been for my parents in their lives, it's really sad to see a career educator feel that disengaged where they have to leave the classroom.
Talking about education today and the way it's playing out in the midterm elections, Jane Fleener is the dean of the College of Education at NC State. Eric Gukan is the senior education advisor to Governor Pat McCrory. James E. Ford is North Carolina's Teacher of the Year, and our conversation with them will continue in a moment. Please stay with us. This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. Today, third installment in our series of The State of Things Issues Table, and we're talking today about education, an issue that is featured prominently in the midterm elections. James E. Ford is with us, North Carolina Teacher of the Year. Eric Gukan is Senior Education Advisor to Governor Pat McCrory, and Jane Fleener is the Dean of the College of Education at North Carolina State. And we'll hear from you as well on Twitter. You can reach us at hashtag SOT Issues, email SOT at WUNC.org. I want to get back to the conversation we were having on spending, because, you know, there's all this back and forth. Was it $500 million? No, it wasn't a $500 million cut, more like $365 million. Is it a 7% increase? Yes, on average, but it's focused on teachers in the first 12 years, back and forth. And is it an increase in spending? And, Eric, this is what I want to talk with you about, because before the break, you know, we talked about the fact that even though more money is being spent this year than last year on education, the fact is we're still not at the level we were in 2007. There were tax cuts enacted by the legislature, signed by the governor. We know we were number 44, very poor in taxes, very high tax rate, and yet businesses were coming here in big numbers because of education. Why not raise taxes and restore spending to where it was and not just claim victory for increasing spending a little bit?
Yeah. Well, last time I was here, you asked me a tax rate question again, and I'm the education advisor, so I'll leave that to Lee Roberts, our budget director. But, you know, where I think we all need to pivot as a state is, you know, clearly, you know, grownups and money are a key factor in education success. But we're not talking enough about students and results. And I think you mentioned the bipartisan nature. Education has always been something that North Carolinians are passionate about. And it hasn't just happened in the last 2 years. This has been decades. And I believe it began with Governor Hunt's emphasis on this, but certainly Governor Martin, Governor Holzhauser. This has always been a bipartisan issue. And we need to continue to double down on education and really focus on students and results. Just two student results that I think we need to be really concerned about in our state. 65% of our kids, by the time they hit the fourth grade, are not reading at grade level, are not reading proficiently. Our hair ought to be on fire about that. When we talk about college readiness for our high school graduates, only 16%, according to ACT scores, are ready to enter college without remediation. These are, you know, rather grim statistics, but I think we all ought to be. And by the way, with that reading score, we're above the national average. Mm. I don't think we ought to be shooting for averages on this. I think we ought to be shooting for excellence. And teachers are a key part of that. But we've got to think about all of anything that is working in terms of making our targeted investments. And I just think that's something that's an informed conversation and getting beyond the sound bites. And hopefully when the election passes, we can all work together across both sides of the aisle. And I know that's Governor McCrory's vision.
Well, but I have to press you a little bit. If you're going to focus on a student, one of the key outcomes is classroom instruction. So if you want to focus on the student, say what's best for them, isn't one of your first answers classroom instruction teachers?
I couldn't agree more. Yeah. I think teachers and school leaders are the number one factor in a student's academic success. All of the data points to that. And, you know, Governor McCrory's career pathways proposal last May talked about we need to reward teachers for their leadership, for their student performance, and for really focusing on continuous improvement. You know, Professor Fleener mentioned National Board certification. That remains something that we pay for. Master's pay is obviously continues to be an issue. The governor proposed a master's in field, so our high need fields. But not only our high need fields, but just if you're teaching if you're getting a master's in the subject you teach, you ought to be rewarded for that. That's something we didn't get through, but the governor continues to push for that. And finally, I think we need to focus on teachers that are in high need fields and that are in high need schools. You know, just connected to the to those high school results, 97% of our African-American high school graduates in North Carolina did not meet college and career readiness. I mean, that's unacceptable. And these are the kind of things that I think we need to be focused on.
Well, James E. Ford, let me ask you about that, about the other issues beyond taking good care of our teachers that would help support students and better outcomes. Where are the priorities for you after teachers?
Well, first of all, I want to applaud Eric by shifting the conversation to students, because the only thing that gives our profession any relevance is our proximity to kids and the influence that we have to help them reach their life goals. But he speaks about some other issues that I think are critically important. I think he's referring to the achievement gap, and that being the relative difference between how students of color perform to their white counterparts, and the interaction between poverty and student outcomes. Those are areas, especially in the early childhood years, that we need to focus on. But again, those are related to educational spending. And there is data that shows that those early interventions have significant effects in the long term that affect students after they graduate and even into the workforce. You get a return on investment for early childhood interventions up to between $4 to $9. So one thing we have to continue to focus on is education spending. Yes, of course, you have to empower the workforce, the teachers that are there to help them out. But things that affect class sizes and resources and some of those other wraparound services, social, emotional support things, those are the things that help kids to really get over the hump, because everybody's not from the most conducive environment to perform well. And so we have to respect the problem, make sure we're deploying resources to make sure everybody has an optimal chance at success in the classroom. So my focus is on what I would like to call wraparound services, things that he mentioned, but also social emotional supports. Students come in my classroom with a lot of issues that, you know, don't relate to education, and the expectation that they're this placed upon them to sit in the classroom and learn after what they endure is difficult. There needs to be a greater marriage between the mental health community and education to help offset some of those things as well. So that's where I would focus my attention.
James Fleener, let me ask you a question before we get too far away from something Eric said, and this has to do with master's pay increases. Right now, there is no bump. That was taken away from teachers. The governor has recommended that for certain master's degrees. And, of course, those who are in the pipeline now will get a pay bump, but no longer after that. The governor's recommended that those who, for certain master's degrees in your field, you would get a pay bump. That didn't pass, but that's the governor's proposal. Legislature not there yet. Where should that be? Should the state of North Carolina be offering higher pay for advanced degrees, and should they be limited to teachers in their field?
Well, I think absolutely master's pay ought to factor into a calculation of teacher proficiency and teacher expertise. I also am very concerned that North Carolina, I was just looking at the data, only has about 26% of its teachers right now with master's degrees. And, I think a master's level degree really supports a teacher's continuous growth. I'm a little concerned about the in-field and how that gets played out and what that may mean. As an example, teachers oftentimes will go into a master's program to get their master's of school administration. Although they get their master's of school administration, they may stay in the classroom for a while before they then go into an assistant principal position and a principal position. We already have shortages of, qualified academic school leaders at the principal's position. Lots of people are retiring. We need to make sure that what in field means will include things like school administration. But I would even argue that depending on the type of master's, some teachers can really support their career development and what they're teaching in things that may be a little more tangential.
Well, let me ask you that, Eric. Why not encourage teachers to get advanced degrees in any area?
Well, I think if we're making a data-driven decision about this, the data pretty clearly shows that student achievement rates are higher for those who have master's in the field that they teach. The School of Science and Math down the road requires that you have to have a master's. I think having a master's is a critically important step, but they're also pretty stringent about making sure that if I'm teaching, I have a master's in education, I'd make a very poor biology teacher at the School of Science and Math. So I think we need to put some guardrails in there as a part of this, how we reward teachers.
All right. Well, let's talk a little bit now about a different issue also related to education, and that is school choice. In 2011, the cap on charter schools in the state was lifted. Legislature recently supported a voucher program that was later determined unconstitutional. Eric, let me stick with you. How do you think an increased emphasis on school choice is going to affect the rest of public education?
Well, I think that it's really important for any kid, regardless of circumstance, to have the tools that they need to reach their potential. And if a school or a community is failing that child and that family, that I'm not going to be the one to get in the way of telling them that they ought to have an excellent option. Howard Fuller, who was recently on this program, a civil rights champion, and I had the honor of having dinner with him recently, and he is a big proponent of opportunity scholarships. And one of the things that he said that resonated with me was, if I'm a poor kid and I'm my two daughters have the option of a public education, a charter education, or a private education. If I'm a poor kid, I don't have those options. And I think as long as we keep this the focus on quality, on transparency, and on the focus on our highest need students, as James was saying, that really needs to be where we focus the whole choice debate, in my opinion.
James, how do you feel about that?
You know what? I kind of take issue with the whole way the argument is framed, the usage of the word choice, only because choice sounds like such a good thing, right? Nobody's against choice, right? The opposite is to be ordered or to be mandated. I think I'm personally in favor of a mixed market approach to things. I don't think it should be a one size fits all. But if we're purporting that something is wrong with a public school education, then by all means, we need to fix those things. And I think when you look at charter schools in particular, there are a lot of great charter schools. There are a lot of middle-of-the-road charter schools. Schools, charter schools that really are failing. And it hasn't been proven, at least empirically, that that a lot of the successes we've seen can be scaled. And so I think we need to be able to say to ourselves, okay, look, eight out of 10 students go to public schools. Okay, so that's the vast majority of our population. Those who are providing that service to our community, we need to make sure that there are things that are woefully inadequate, that we shore those things up and not take a tuck and run approach where we reappropriate funds and say, this is terrible, you can go here. I think it's incumbent upon us as leaders in our community to make sure we fix whatever those problems are, not simply retreat from some of those challenges.
Jane?
Oh, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And you know, one of my concerns with the charter movement is taking the resources away from the more traditional schools, while at the same time lifting some of the reporting obligations that public schools have. And I think that is something that, in all fairness, if a charter school is a public school, they need to have the same sort of expectations for accountability. I do think, however, charters serve another really valuable function, and that is as incubation sites for innovation. Mm-hmm. And I want to see that continue. I know that I visited a charter school this week, and I was so impressed with what they were doing. So, you know, that certainly is something that factors in. But the funding is a big concern. I've seen what creating an entire system of charter schools has done in New Orleans, and that's really problematic for me.
Well, what about the accounting and access, Eric? Because those two do. I mean, you said, you know, who am I? If a public school is failing, who am I to stand in the way? Well, if you're the governor, you're the state. You are the one who's supposed to fix the system. But innovation, that's a great idea. What if it takes place outside of the state system, as long as there's accountability and access? And those are the two. So if you're all being driven by the same standards and everybody has access to free transportation and free and reduced lunch, then we may not see resegregation. I mean, are those key components, do you think? Do those have to be present?
Well, here's what I think the three things that any school should have. I think we have to have a real focus on student success, and accountability is kind of the harsh word for that, but I think it needs to be focused on excellence. Two, we need to allow our teachers and our school leaders the flexibility to do their jobs. And communities, there's going to be a tremendous amount of flexibility. What works in Durham may not work in Northampton County. And thirdly, I think we absolutely have to be transparent with public dollars. And the governor has taken a strong stand on this in opposition to some of the legislation on this. And we actually have asked the state board to step in on this, and they are asking all of our charters to come up with any public dollar that's being spent. We need to absolutely be transparent about that.
Talking about the politics of education today on The State of Things, Eric Gukan is senior education advisor to Governor Pat McCrory. But let me ask you again about access, because it does seem to me that if there are ways in which students with less wealth can't come to your school, we could easily see a kind of resegregation along economic lines.
Well, the example that I'd use in Northampton County, actually, is Kip Gaston College Preparatory, over 1,200 kids going there, northeastern North Carolina, very rural community. You cannot skim out there. And that school has been around for over 10 years, has 100% graduation rate and 100% college going rate. They've exercised the flexibility. They've really doubled down on their teaching and their instruction, and the emphasis is on every child, regardless of circumstance, having the option to go to college. And they've succeeded. Now, James mentioned replicating that, and I think we need to be careful about that. But if something is working, we need to fund it. If something isn't working, we need to close it and start over. And I think that, you know, this isn't a charter debate to me. It's a debate about all of our public schools. You know, Jane mentioned New Orleans. In New Orleans, and again, you've got a huge national disaster in Katrina, so it's not a direct analogy, certainly to North Carolina. But student achievement rates went up when that experiment occurred, and you know, I think there's something to that.
On the state of things today, we wish we had more time, but we do not. Eric Gukan is the senior education advisor to Governor Pat McCrory. James E. Ford is a world history teacher at Geringer High School in Charlotte and this year's Teacher of the Year. And we also have with us the dean of the College of Education at NC State, Jane Fleener. And I want to thank all of you for being on the program. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
It's an honor.
Thanks for
Thanks.
Having us.
And thank you for listening to The State of Things, a program produced by Laura Lee, Anita Rao, Hadi Mawagdi, and Will Michaels. Alex Curley is our intern. Robin Copley is our technical director. Brent Wolf, WUNC's news director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.